Hey, you guys, this is Christy Young. Welcome to Bite Size Apologetics, where we pursue the truth one bite at a time. Okay, so in a court of law, if you have eyewitness testimony, that is the best and most direct evidence. If you have someone who has seen a crime occur, they saw who had the gun in their hands. They saw who what the criminal did and exactly how the crime scene played out. And they can tell you from their mind's eye, from their memory, exactly how the crime occurred. That is the best evidence. Now, there could always be problems with that eyewitness evidence, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, but I won't go there now. So ideally, you want to corroborate that evidence with physical evidence from the crime scene or another witness's testimony, something else to make sure that that person would not have a motivation or a bias to lie in giving their testimony. In the event you don't know this, the Bible was written by multiple eyewitnesses to the life and teaching of Jesus, to the miracles he performed, and to his death, resurrection, and ascension into heaven. And there are a lot of people who believe that the Bible is myth or it's a fantasy, but let me tell you these awesome details. The Bible is actually 66 books that were written over a span of over 1,400 years by at least 40 authors. So y'all, we have 40 authors writing on different continents in different places over a span of 1,400 years, and there are 66 books in the Bible. And would you believe they are unified and theologically consistent? And the eyewitness testimony of the four gospel accounts, while written from different perspectives, have unified themes and contain the same descriptors and descriptions of events. Now, they may come from unique perspectives because unique individuals penned them, just like you'd imagine seeing at a real crime scene. If you have four different perspectives of individuals who capture portions of a crime taking place, they may all remember different facts, or they may focus on different parts of the crime. But it doesn't mean that they're not consistent. It doesn't mean that there's a problem with their testimony. It just means that they are unique individuals who all had different perspectives and possibly different vantage points of the same crime. In fact, it actually makes me believe that the Bible is It helps me to believe, it supports my belief that the Bible is true, that not every gospel account is written with the exact same facts in the exact same order, with the exact same details, because the reality is humans do capture events and they retell narratives in different ways. So it actually, to me, corroborates the fact that the Bible is true, was written by multiple eyewitnesses, and that each of their testimonies, while consistent, do contain different facts or slightly different perspectives. To me, that's indicative of its trustworthiness. Okay, so here's one of the coolest things, I think. The books of the New Testament were not written long, like hundreds of years after all of these events took place. In fact, they were actually written during the lifetimes of those involved in the events described. Let's examine a few of these eyewitnesses. Matthew was one of Jesus' apostles, one of Jesus' disciples. He walked with Christ in his earthly ministry. He was a tax collector and a disciple of Jesus, and thus he was an eyewitness. He wrote his gospel in order to preserve written eyewitness testimony about the ministry of Jesus. Now we also have Mark, okay? Mark was an eyewitness to many of the events he recorded and a very close associate of Peter. In fact, Peter called Mark and described him as being like his son, like a son to him. And so Peter was an eyewitness and Mark was an eyewitness to a lot of events that he penned, that he described in his book, in the book of Mark, the gospel account of Mark. But he also attributed some of the information that he received and penned from Peter, who was also an eyewitness. So Mark is writing from his own perspective as an eyewitness and from that of Peter as an eyewitness. Mark's narrative and portrayal of Peter indicate that his gospel derives from Peter. A lot of it does. Mark recorded Peter's preaching about the things that Jesus said and did. The Mark who wrote this gospel was John Mark, and the church in Jerusalem sometimes gathered at his mom's home. You can take a look at that at Acts 12. 12 through 17. This same Mark was the cousin of Barnabas, and he sometimes traveled with Barnabas. He accompanied Barnabas and Paul back to Antioch after their famine relief mission to Jerusalem in Acts 12:25. Mark next then went with Barnabas and Paul on part of the first missionary journey as an assistant, but then turned back. The Apostle Peter referred to Mark as his son in 1 Peter 5:13. And then Paul asked Timothy to bring Mark with you, for he is useful to me in the ministry, in 2 Timothy 4:11. So you guys, Mark traveled with Barnabas. He traveled with Paul. He was like a son to Peter. And so he wrote from his own eyewitness account. And then from the eyewitness account of Peter, he penned much of what Peter described to him. And then we have Luke. So Luke was actually written by a careful historian who was not an eyewitness. He was a good friend and a companion of Paul. He was someone who cared very much about writing an orderly account so that we would all have it later. And then he desired it specifically for Theophilus. Let me read you the intro to Luke. It says this: "Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the things that have been accomplished among us, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word have delivered them to us, it seemed good to me also, having followed all things closely for some time past, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, that you may have certainty concerning the things that you have been taught." So Luke very much desired to write an orderly account, and he says that he has followed all things closely for some time past. So he is a historian desiring to get the facts straight in an orderly account, because Mark's account is not orderly. Okay, so let's talk about John. John was an apostle and a disciple of Jesus. So he walked with Jesus in his earthly ministry. He was one of the sons of Zebedee. John and James were sons of Zebedee that were a part of Jesus's ministry, and they were both disciples. John was a part of Jesus's inner circle, along with Peter and James. And then John thus gives us firsthand eyewitness testimony. 1 John 1:1-3 states this: "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard and which we have seen with our eyes, which we looked upon and have touched with our hands concerning the word of life, that life, the life, was made manifest, and we have seen it and testified to it and proclaimed to you the eternal life, which was with the Father and was made manifest to us. That which we have seen and heard, we proclaim also to you, so that you too may have fellowship with us. And indeed our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ." John wanted people to know that I'm not repeating something I've been told. I'm not repeating something that I've made up. But he literally says in 1 John 1, he said, I'm that which was from the beginning, that we heard, that we actually saw with our eyes, which we looked upon and we touched with our hands concerning the word of life, concerning Jesus. That is what that's what we've seen, and that's what we testify to and proclaim to you. That which we have seen and heard, we proclaim to you. He says it twice. And so he is making sure, he's affirming, he's underscoring the fact that he wants his readers to know that he's not making this up, that this is actual history that he was an eyewitness to, that he wants to record for all of history that would follow him to know about to know about Christ, to know about the Messiah. Okay, so now we get to Paul. And you guys, I love Paul. Paul was a persecutor of Christians. Paul was not really a disciple of Jesus. He never walked with Jesus. He didn't walk with him in his earthly ministry. In fact, he persecuted Christians. He persecuted believers, people who followed Christ. Before his encounter with Christ on the road to Damascus, he heavily persecuted Christians. He even held the jackets while men stoned Stephen, who was a follower of Christ. Paul encountered the risen Christ on the road to Damascus, and he became an apostle and an eyewitness of the risen Christ. He wrote out of his missionary work and pastoral work. And then y'all, Paul authored much of the New Testament. He's the author to Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus, and Philemon. Philemon, I don't know, and people pronounce that differently. And so Paul, y'all, but Paul was privileged to meet the risen Christ, and he calls himself an apostle because he saw the risen Christ. While he did not walk with Jesus in his earthly ministry, he encountered Jesus after he had risen from the grave, and that's when Jesus called him gave him a new heart, changed his life's mission. And that's from that moment on, at that encounter on the road to Damascus, Paul began to follow Christ and to spread the gospel, which is incredible. So he was an eyewitness to the risen Christ. And then Peter, y'all, Simon Peter, also known as Cephas, was an apostle and an eyewitness of the Lord's majesty. He was one of the first followers of Jesus, and he was one of Jesus's closest friends and a part of his inner circle. Peter lived as a disciple of the Lord for 3 years, and as a natural-born leader, he became the spokesman for the 12 disciples. Peter was a part of the inner circle of Jesus' disciples along with James and John. He called himself an elder and witness to Christ's sufferings in 1 Peter 5:1. He describes Christ's crucifixion with an intimate knowledge that only a disciple would have of that event in 1 Peter 2:21 through 24. And then Peter authored 1 and 2 Peter. And then finally, y'all, there's James. James was also a part of the inner circle of Jesus' disciples, and he authored the Epistle of James. He was a son of Zebedee and brother to John the Apostle. And so James, you guys, is also an eyewitness to the events that he describes in the Epistle of James.
And we're back.
I want to talk to you about eyewitness testimony. When you receive and have a witness that claims to have seen a crime front and center, and to have been a witness to all the events that have taken place, you can't just take their statements at face value. There are several things you need to look for to make sure that you can trust them as an eyewitness to a crime scene. And so here are the four things that we will do to sort of test an eyewitness to make sure that you can trust their eyewitness testimony. The first thing is, you want to make sure that they actually could have been there at the scene of the crime to be an eyewitness. Were they able to be present? Were they in fact present at the crime scene in order to be an eyewitness? Number two, is their eyewitness testimony corroborated? So it can be corroborated with physical evidence or with another witness, piece of eyewitness testimony from another witness. There could be physical evidence, fingerprints, footprints at the crime scene that would corroborate the testimony that they're sharing. So corroboration would be number two. Number three, we want to make sure that their testimony does not change over time, that their testimony is consistent over time. And number four, the final component is that we want to make sure that there's no presence of bias or a motivation to lie. And so we will examine those four things with respect to the eyewitness testimony in the Gospels. Okay, so let's jump right in. And let me tell you, I think like him. I like his logic. It's J. Warner Wallace with Cold Case Christianity. He is an amazing cold case detective, and he was an atheist, but applies all the tactics that he's learned as a detective. He has applied all of those skills to sleuthing and almost treating Christianity as a cold case to determine whether or not the Bible is trustworthy and whether or not Jesus is real. And he has so many great articles, so many great videos on coldcasechristianity.com, and great ways that he looks at and weighs evidence from the perspective of a detective. And I really, really like it. And so I highly suggest you check those out. Those are great apologetics resources to listen to, even one little video every morning of him analyzing something. He has great videos on this topic too, on eyewitnesses and can we trust the Gospels as eyewitness testimony. So I suggest that. Okay, but so let's jump back in. So here, we're going to examine whether or not these eyewitness accounts from Matthew, Mark, now, and Mark traveled with Paul. He traveled with Barnabas, but he also received much of the Gospel of Mark from Peter. Matthew, Mark, then Luke was a historian, but received much of the Gospel that he penned from Peter and from the Gospel of Mark. In fact, he cites and quotes Mark often. And then John. And then can I tell you, we glean so much from Paul too. Paul, his writings, he has the earliest writings in the New Testament in Galatians. Galatians was written as early as 49 AD. So it was one of the first books, likely the first book of the New Testament ever written. But Paul Paul writes Galatians, 1 Corinthians, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, some of these early writings, within 20 years of Paul seeing the risen Christ. So that's just cool stuff, because in terms of dating ancient literature, that is unheard of. It's unfathomable that we would have recorded written words of eyewitness testimony that soon after the events that occurred. And we will dive into that more as we get into the next video on the manuscripts being reliable. But I just want to say this for now, because I've had to do a ton of research over the last week and a half with respect to the timing of these gospel accounts and when they were written. And there is some dispute among scholars, like there always is, in terms of when these books were written. But can I tell you, I am super encouraged, because the difference between scholars as they debate is marginal among trustworthy scholars. It's within a couple of years. And so I feel like I believe that there is a significant case that can be built to establish the early dating of the Gospels. That means that I believe that they were all written within 30 years, 30-ish years. In fact, most of the New Testament was penned within the first 30 or 35 years after Jesus died and was then raised from the dead, ascended into heaven. And why does that matter? That matters because it helps us to appreciate that these were eyewitness accounts written during a time where there were other eyewitnesses still alive to falsify these accounts. So when Luke was writing, when Paul was writing about the risen Christ, there were people still living who could have said, hey, that's whack. What Paul's saying is not true. That's not who Jesus was. Or when, even in 1 Corinthians, when Paul claims that over 500 people saw the risen Christ, that Jesus appeared to over 500 on the same day. Well, and then he said that this time most of them were still living at the time that he penned that in 1 Corinthians. Well, that's crazy. And from what I've studied, there were at least 300 people still living at the time that 1 Corinthians was penned, that those words were penned. And so there were numerous people that could have falsified what Paul said or challenged it as untrue if it had been untrue, but it was never falsified. It was not challenged, which indicates to me that the great weight of evidence is that what he claimed is true. If all these gospel accounts were written within 30 or 35 years of Jesus' ascension into heaven, then they were falsifiable. And just to give y'all some facts, for those of you who like facts, Jesus died in 33 AD. He was crucified in 33 AD. And Acts was likely written in 61 AD, 60 or 61 AD. And so, y'all, not even 30 years after Jesus ascended into heaven. And then Luke was written prior to that, a year or two prior to that, likely. And so, again, within that 30-year time frame from Jesus ascending into heaven, Mark was written even earlier, so fewer years than that. Based upon my research, it appears that Luke was written between 53 and 60 AD, and that's 20 to 27 years after Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. And then Mark, which was written prior to Luke, because Luke uses much of Mark's gospel, much of Mark's history or historical narrative, Luke's goal was to write an orderly account, and Papias, a bishop, a first century bishop, mentioned about Mark's account that Mark's account was accurate but not orderly. And so Luke set out to create a chronological, more orderly account than what Mark had done. So Luke comes after Mark in an attempt to create a chronological account, an orderly account of Christ's life and death and resurrection. And so Mark was likely written in the late 40s or late 40s to late 50s. And so that would have been roughly 15 to 25 years after Jesus's death. So you guys, these writings are not hundreds being penned hundreds of years after Jesus' death. And this matters because it's so much easier to lie 200 years after you claim that an event takes place, right? Because no one's alive to falsify it. No one's alive to say, that's whack, that's not how that played out. You can kind of make up whatever you want to say, because no one's going to say that that didn't happen, because no one was alive at the time that you're claiming it happened. But it's much harder to lie if you are writing to the known world, to in the area where Jesus lived, performed his ministry, I mean, walked out his ministry, performed miracles, died, and was resurrected, revealed himself to people, and then now you're writing these eyewitness accounts within 30 years of that time frame where people are still alive to that could falsify your account if your account is not based upon the facts. And these this eyewitness testimony was not falsified. Okay, number two, we want to make sure that these eyewitness accounts have additional corroboration, which means we want to make sure that there's additional evidence to support these accounts and that they're not just whack or made up or someone's opinion on a Wednesday, you know, but that they didn't actually happen. And in fact, can I encourage you that there is a great weight of evidence that supports the eyewitness testimony of Scripture. All right, you guys. So the New Testament Gospels are corroborated much more significantly, more substantially than any other ancient text. We have archaeology that supports eyewitness testimony. We have non-Christian authors, historians from this time period that corroborate portions of the text. We also have fulfilled prophecy. So hundreds of years prior to any of this taking place, there were prophecies in the Old Testament that these eyewitnesses watch come true in, and they pin the happenings, what they see, the circumstances that they see occurring in the New Testament in fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy. And then there are more than one of them seeing it, pinning it. So there are eyewitness accounts that corroborate other eyewitness accounts, in addition to having physical evidence in terms of archaeological finds that support this eyewitness testimony. Okay, number three, one of the other things we look at in terms of whether or not eyewitness testimony is true and accurate is whether or not a person changes their testimony over time. And so we care about whether the gospels are changed over time. You know, are the gospels that we have today the same gospels, eyewitness testimony, that were penned in the first century? The evidence strongly suggests that they are the same because there is a chain of custody. We can, and y'all, this is so cool. And I'm just learning all this myself. So props to you, moms and dads and kids who will forever be learning. Let us learn together and let us celebrate having a love for learning, and especially in biblical things and biblical teaching. So I'm learning that, like, for example, in the Gospel of John, John can be traced. Okay, so John walked with Christ, learned from Jesus, watched his daily life example, and then watched the miracles he performed, sat under his teaching, saw his life, his death, and witnessed his resurrection. And then he had students. So he had three personal students, John did. Ignatius, Polycarp, and Papias. And then they had a student, Irenaeus. And then he had a student, Hippolytus. I'm like, and then, okay, so John passed what he learned and saw from Jesus to Polycarp, Ignatius, and Papias. And then those three passed what they knew down to their students. And you guys, there becomes this oral tradition that is passed down and then captured in the written word, where we can look at these writings from the students of John and see that the original writings from John's first students, even as they are passed down to their students, passed down to another student, as that student passes down to another student, the writings are unchanged over time. And the gospels that we have today still match those first writings of John's initial three students. We call that in the law, we call that the chain of custody, that you want to see a piece of evidence when it's offered, and when it's offered into evidence, someone will make a note, describe it, take a picture of it initially, and to be able to put it into evidence. And then anyone else who takes out that piece of evidence to examine it will additionally write their own notes about the what they find, what the evidence looks like, that's conditioned. They will describe it. They will take a picture of it to then put it back in the log, so that there is a chain of custody all the way down to the present day to show where the evidence has been, who has taken time to look at it, so that you can see from the very beginning that the goal is that that piece of evidence would remain unadulterated, unchanged over time. And that's what we see here with the Gospels. The evidence is clear. The foundational claims related to Jesus have not changed at all from the first record to the last. And then you guys, this is crazy. Typically in a court of law, in a crime, you know, people have motivation. There's motivation or bias. You know, people have a motivation to lie or a motivation to deceive. Well, some people do. People can have a motivation to lie with regard to their testimony. And so it's your job as a detective or as an attorney to figure out whether or not a witness has a motivation to lie and whether that would cause them to lie. Okay. And so I love this. J. Warner Wallace says that in all of his time being a detective, and I know spending over 10 years cracking cold cases, he said that there are only three reasons that people commit crimes, and they are this. All sins are caused by only one of three motivations: financial greed, sexual or relational lust, and then the pursuit of power. So for one of those three reasons, that would be the reason that a person would commit a crime. And so in this context, you guys, with the gospel authors, if the gospels were lying about their claims, they would only be lying for one of these three reasons. And so you guys, did the gospel authors get rich? No. Did they make a ton of money off of sharing the gospel? No. Two, did they get a bunch of girlfriends as a result of their following Jesus, walking with Jesus, sharing the gospel, going out to spread the news about who Jesus is as the Messiah? No, absolutely not. And then what about power? Did they gain a lot of power? No, absolutely not. And then in fact, you can look at the example of Paul. I guess someone could argue that they had a little bit of fame. Someone could argue they had a little bit of fame from leading the early church, right? From following Jesus. And even if it ended up being, they were oppressed, they were persecuted, you know, but they did have eyes on them. However, let's look at Paul. I love this. J. Warner Wallace points this out. He says, if we look at the life of Paul, Paul literally had it all. He was a Pharisee, a member of the Sanhedrin. He was born in the tribe of Benjamin. He had everything going from him as a successful person prior to encountering Christ. And then when he encountered Jesus, he laid all of that down to pursue Christ. And so he actually gave up all of his political power, his standing in society, his all the prominence that he had. He gave it up to follow Jesus. And then the little bit of prominence maybe that he had, you know, by the end of his life, or that as he put on display who Christ was, it was minimal, marginal compared to that which he held before meeting the risen Christ. And so y'all, he actually left the position he had to join the very group that he was happily charged with destroying, only to suffer persecution then for many years in the hope that he might one day return to a position of religious authority. Why would Paul leave the position he held to jump in with the group he'd been persecuting, is basically what Wallace is saying, to then in the hopes that he might end where he began? That's so dumb. He's not going to do that. He would have just stayed originally as a member of the Sanhedrin. He would have stayed as a Pharisee with the position that he held. He had a great gig going, but for the fact that he met with Christ and Christ radically changed his world. So that instead of he started as a persecutor of the church, but then he met Jesus. Jesus flipped his life on its head. And then he really had no choice because he saw the risen Christ, recognized who Jesus was, and wanted to follow him. None of the gospel authors gained anything from their testimony. Instead, they suffered a life of persecution, and a lot of them experienced the death of martyrs for their claims. I want to tell you, I have this great book from Answers in Genesis, and it's really cool. It's worth showing you. It's the big book of history, and y'all, inside, it's super cool. Can I just tell you, they have all kinds of cool things. And so I highly recommend getting it. It's from the Ark. We went to, in Kentucky, the Creation Museum and the Ark. Man, they have, and this is huge. I mean, they just have, anyway, really cool. It's a very cool biblical timeline. But can I tell you, let me just tell you real fast. I'm going to run down the apostles and how their lives ended, okay? Simon Peter was crucified upside down. Andrew was bound and crucified for 2 days. James, the son of Zebedee, was beheaded. John, James's brother, was saved from death but banished to the Isle of Patmos. Philip was imprisoned and crucified. Bartholomew was beaten, crucified, and beheaded. Thomas was killed by a spear in 52 AD. Matthew, the historical records are unclear about how he died. James, the son of Alphaeus, beaten to death. Thaddeus was killed by arrows. Simon the Zealot was crucified. Judas hung himself. Matthias was stoned and beheaded. Paul was whipped, stoned, and beheaded. Barnabas was tortured and stoned to death. And James, the brother of Jesus, was stoned. So, I guess the reason I'm reading all of that is to say that these men had no motivation to lie. They would not have laid their lives down in ultimate martyrdom for a lie. If this was not true, they would not have been willing to give their lives for a lie. I know there's no way I would give my life for a lie. I'm not going to stand behind a lie and go out as a martyr for something that I don't believe is true. No, it's very evident that these men believed that they had encountered Jesus, the Messiah, and that he was worth living for and that he was worth dying for. And again, that's one of the ways that I know that this is real and true. All of these eyewitnesses encountered Christ. That's what they claim. They encountered Christ. And yet, for them to repeat the gospel, for them to talk about the Messiah in the midst of a culture that doesn't want to hear it. In fact, on every front, people want to persecute them and oppress them and make them suffer because they don't like Jesus's message. They don't like that he's gaining a following. They don't like, on every front, they don't like Jesus. They want to smite his followers. So in fact, it would have been to their every advantage to walk away from Christ, to not share the gospel, to not be a disciple of him. And yet they did because it was real and true. Why else would they follow Christ? Why? There is no other reason that they did not stand to gain anything from an earthly perspective. They saw though that he taught with authority as one with authority. They saw the miracles that he performed and the power that he had that was supernatural. They got to see from an eyewitness perspective the reality of Christ, the Messiah, walking on this earth, and none of them walked away from him. In fact, they all left what they were doing immediately and followed him when he invited them to follow him. And
let's take a break now for some comedy cravings.
Why don't you give Elsa a balloon?
Why?
Because she'll let it go. Yeah.
Why is Cinderella so bad at soccer?
Why?
Because he ran away from the ball.
I got a joke.
Why did the king go to the dentist?
I don't know.
Because he was getting a crown.
What does the spider order with his burger, Bubs?
French fries.
Never tell jokes about pizza. They're like so cheesy. What do you call a spider with no eye? A spider.
What do you call a deer with no eyes? A no-eyed deer!
I'm gonna
stop.
What do you call a sleeping dino?
What do you call a sleeping dino, Bubs?
A snore dino.
A dino?
Snore.
Yes!
Guys, I just bought a new pair of spider web print pants, and they're so cute, but the fly keeps getting stuck. Why did the coyote cross the road? To get to the chicken.
Alrighty, so remember, the Bible is truth. T-R-U-T-H. The Bible is trustworthy because it is based upon the testimony of eyewitnesses, is a collection of reliable manuscripts. It underscores fulfilled prophecy. It's theologically consistent and supported by historical evidence. See you next time.
And remember, always ask questions, seek truth, examine the evidence, and pray for wisdom.
Bye!
Remember, always ask questions, seek truth, examine the evidence, and pray for wisdom.
Bye!
And remember, always ask questions. Seek truth, examine the evidence, and pray for wisdom. Bye!
Alrighty, you guys, thanks so much for watching. Please share these videos and like and subscribe to the channel because it helps support the ministry so that we can continue to create content.